Hey there, and welcome to Marketing in the Raw. That is the podcast, and my name is Adam Helway. I am the host. I'm so glad that you could join me. This is a place where I try to expand how you define the practice of marketing and your vision of where it's headed, especially in a digitally connected world. You know, as a child, science was my favorite subject by far. And one of my favorite pioneers in science has always been Charles Darwin. I was fascinated by learning about his study of life in the Galapagos Islands. And to this day, that is one of the places I still would love to go, and it's on my bucket list. While most commonly associated with biology, it's Darwin's contributions to psychology that relate to today's conversation. In 1873, Darwin argued that human emotional expressions likely evolved in the same way as physical features, such as opposable thumbs or walking upright. Darwin believed emotional expressions served the very useful function of communicating with other members of your species. For example, an angry facial expression demonstrates a willingness to scrap and fight, but leaves the observer with an option to back off so nobody gets hurt. Darwin's view had a big impact on the development of psychology. Years later, in 1890, psychologist William James' classic text, The Principles of Psychology, used the term evolutionary psychology. Evolutionary psychology is the study of behavior, thought, and feelings as viewed through the lens of evolutionary biology. And while our environment has changed a lot over the centuries, many of our psychological adaptations that impact how we think, communicate, and feel have stuck around. And that's where my guest for this episode comes in. His name's Tim Ash, and he's a sought-after international keynote speaker and an acknowledged authority on evolutionary psychology as well as digital marketing. He ran digital marketing agency SiteTuners for almost 20 years, where he worked with clients such as Google, Facebook, Expedia, Cisco, and more. He's the founder of an international conference series called Digital Growth Unleashed and the author of two best-selling books on landing page optimization, as well as his upcoming book, Unleashing Your Primal Brain, Demystifying How We Think and Why We Act. In this episode, Tim talks with me about evolutionary psychology and why marketers should even care about it. We also get to dive into how the adaptations our primal ancestors used to survive in the earliest days of life on this planet still live on and impact customer behavior to this day. Let's take a listen to this interview with Tim Ash. Hey, Tim Ash, how are you doing, sir?
Great, Adam. Pandemic great, even.
Yeah, pandemic great. It's a Friday, I think, right? We don't know anymore these days what day of the week it is. I am so glad to have you. And you're out of one of my favorite places in the world, actually. You're in San Diego, aren't you?
Yeah, it's in the U.S., it's the only place I can imagine living. I mean, there's Barcelona, Sydney, Australia. I'd move to some other places, but this is it. I came out here to go to UC San Diego and I never left.
Oh, wow. So this is not, you're not just a transplant at some point in time that said, I'd love to go move down there. You've been there ever since, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. Stayed there for grad school and I've been here ever since. It's a great home base. I walk every day and do my Tai Chi by the ocean. So it doesn't suck.
Oh, you're that guy. You're that guy that I see when I'm over there in San Diego. Well, I want to dig in a little bit because I'm also just getting to know you. We have a mutual friend and I got to be introduced to you. And so I'm just getting to know you here. And so I want to let the listeners also get to know you a little bit. So you've been just for a little while now doing some work in an area called conversion rate optimization. So you guys have been, you've been working, you worked with an agency on creating more effective websites and landing pages and doing all kinds of good things, the stuff that really kind of rubber meets the road for why you even do websites and landing pages and stuff in the first place. How long you been were you doing that? And what is it that you enjoyed about that space that kept you in there so long? I mean, shoot, you stayed in San Diego all this time. I guess I shouldn't even have to ask, but can you share a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So I worked for some big companies and then broke off on my own, quit grad school after 7 years in learning, doing machine learning and neural networks, that sort of thing. And I said, I need to do my own thing. So I started in early .com days, helping launch new businesses and new startups. And then we transitioned into was early days of pay-per-click marketing, basically driving paid traffic to your website, and then became a super affiliate. So basically said, okay, we'll pay for the traffic and you give us the profits off of anything that we deliver to your site. The problem was, what we found is we were driving really high quality traffic, but the website sucked. And that's what was crimping our ability to make money. So it turned into kind of a tail wagging the dog situation. We decided to focus exclusively on fixing websites and making them more efficient, and sold off the affiliate business. So that was about 2000, and I've written a couple of best-selling books on landing page optimization. I started what was called the Conversion Conference, the first international conference series here and in Europe on the subject. It's now called Digital Growth Unleashed. And I ran my agency Site Tuners for many, many years working on conversion rate optimization for clients.
So that's really interesting. That's the first time I heard this about you. So you were going to school for, you were learning machine learning and neural networks.
Yep.
And, you know, not to put any age out there, but you were talking about sort of the dot-com era now, but that's, people are talking a lot about those things now, but that was a while back.
Oh yeah. And I did some groundbreaking stuff on the algorithm side, basically how to teach computers to learn from example. The problem was there really weren't the big data sets to train them up on, you know, where are the examples coming from? Obviously with the advent of the internet, that's not a problem anymore. We're drowning in data. So yeah. That's why artificial intelligence or machine learning has really become so powerful. Now you have the algorithms and the data to train them up on. And now they're really super effective.
Well, now I understand the connection also between that and kind of now your more current area of exploration and focus, which is in evolutionary biology and psychology, correct?
Yeah, that's right. Basically, I've always been interested. Cognitive science was one of my undergraduate majors, along with computer engineering at UC San Diego. And now I've kind of come full circle many decades later. And what I found to be super helpful in my marketing career was all of that durable stuff about how our mind works. So unfortunately, I think a lot of people are focused on the technology and they forget the what are they trying to influence is the human mind. And that only changes on an evolutionary timescale. So we're basically don't change at all for practical purposes. And I'd rather harness all of that goodness, if you will, all of that durable knowledge and use it to serve me in my whole career rather than focusing on the latest technical tricks.
The environment that humans are in has a lot to do with how humans are evolving, correct?
Well, again, we're not really evolving. I mean, in your lifetime, we're not going to evolve. Over sure. The last 10,000 years since we've become agrarian and kind of settled down and are no longer hunter-gatherers, we have evolved, say, some of us to be lactose tolerant, or blue eyes have emerged only in the last 12,000 years, for example, or alcohol tolerance. Those are things that can evolve pretty quickly, but over thousands of years. But for practical purposes, we're just a snapshot in time. We are who we are right now, and we're not changing.
Well, and that's why I wanted to ask in regards to, is there a conflict of any kind, or maybe it's just a matter of the conflict is created because we as humans don't understand this very much when it comes to applying it. Just like you said, we're so focused on the technology, and I'm glad you said that because as I was thinking about talking with you, I was thinking the same thing. I think in my experience, folks often are worried about this is what I want to say, and this is the technology that I'm going to use in order to deliver it. And they're not often thinking about the human being on the other side and understanding how to connect with that human being. Are there examples that you can think of where it seems that the environment is maybe changing too rapidly in a direction that's not taking into account that evolutionary psychology and biology?
Well, there's a lot of issues with complex modern civilization. I mean, we definitely were designed for it. So all of this political polarization you're seeing and echo chambers and confirming the bias of our current in-group or cultural group and thinking everybody else is the enemy. Some of those have very deep and appropriate evolutionary roots. And unfortunately, we have to struggle with that right now. But again, with the technology, what's important is, like you said, the human part. What are we trying to influence? And it's a human being on the other end. And the good news is that all 8 billion of us on the planet share a lot of the same kind of shortcuts and unconscious decision-making approaches. So there's some pretty general principles that you can apply to influence people without even having to get very specific about the circumstances.
Why should marketers or people in business care about these topics?
Well, this is the only thing you can build a career on. I mean, if you're going to worry about, you know, 140 characters on Twitter or 7 seconds on TikTok, or I don't know what it is, holograms implanted in your head tomorrow, or you know, 3D suppositories. I don't know what the next technology is, but
that's Apple 5 years from now.
Exactly. Embedded stuff. I mean, I'm not looking forward to those days, but you know, if you're going to focus on that, that's the channel through which you deliver something. But again, you're trying to influence is the human mind. And the more you learn about that, the longer your career is going to be and the more effective you're going to be.
I think, like you said, this is a commonality within all human beings, for one. And and I agree with you 100%. I find that folks are trying often to catch up with the changing times. And the changing times has to do with, like you said, formats and channels that are available. And then suddenly this new device comes out. And you know, we've had smart speakers feel fairly ubiquitous in some households. And they've only been out for 5 years or so, right? So there's they've changed behavior from their just introduction into the world. And there's plenty more, I think, that's going to be happening. And so trying to play catch up, I think this is what you're saying, right? Trying to play catch up with those things is definitely there's some level of importance for that, but you're going to, you know, positioning yourself as the expert on this particular channel means you're probably going to be chasing it quite often, and maybe find yourself out of work when that thing evolves or gets acquired by somebody else, or behaviors end up changing.
That's right. Or you know, Google burps, and all of a sudden they're not allowing you to find out where your traffic's coming from. Now, what are you going to do? All that wonderful campaign tracking isn't available anymore. So, it's kind of, why don't you invest in the brain? And that's kind of my approach, which is, you know, there's so much going on in social sciences, behavioral economics, neuromarketing, even medical imaging and things like that. This is kind of a golden age of understanding how human beings think on a very granular level. And so that's where I'd be kind of investing my time, is learning all about that stuff.
So this is awesome, because again, as I was getting to know you, I thought, so what's the connection here? It's got to be, you know, and I agree with the connection, the premise of how to make, for instance, your website more effective in a way, but also understanding your previous interest in the space of like, again, the machine learning, the cognitive sciences and all that stuff. This totally makes sense. It feels a lot like what you've been doing with the internet has been just a little stopgap, actually, probably between that and what you're diving into right now.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I find that, you know, one of the things that I really enjoy is talking about this, teaching. I'm an international keynote speaker. I've spoken on stages of 12,000 people, and I really enjoy that. And I just recently wrote my latest book called Unleash Your Primal Brain, about evolutionary psychology. And I just want to be kind of like that. Back in the old days, there was a guy named Carl Sagan who had this book called Cosmos, and he explained astrophysics to the general audience. And heck, I figure if he can make astrophysics exciting, I can certainly do that for the human brain.
Well, so I want to ask you, going back to our discussion about how this matters to, you know, businesses and marketers, could you share an example of this in action a little bit so we can peel that back?
Yeah, absolutely. And to be clear, this isn't some airy-fairy theoretical stuff. When I was running my strategic conversion rate optimization agency, SiteTuners, we documented over $1.2 billion in incremental revenue for our clients, from the Googles and Nestle's and Facebook's of the world on down. And most of it was based on these durable neuromarketing principles based on evolutionary psychology. So this stuff works, and it works really well. One obvious thing is we often used anchoring as a technique. People don't have any sense of the absolute value of anything. They basically just compare to what else is available around them. So, for example, if you were about to hire me, how much does it cost, Tim? And I'd say, well under $1 million. And you'd laugh and we'd both laugh. But I just put an anchor in your head. And now anything I say is going to be compared to that $1 million number. And so $100,000 is going to seem like a friggin' bargain. So using things like that can be very, very powerful to sway people.
Wow, that's interesting. And so let's talk a little bit about your book. With all the experience that you've had sort of putting this into practice, like you were saying, what was the most sort of maybe enlightening and surprising thing that you found through the process of writing this book?
Well, I did a lot of research. Maybe I can answer that by saying why I wrote it. I read a lot, as you can imagine, in this space. All of the stuff applied to neuromarketing, behavioral economics. And my problem was that there were researchers writing about their own research. So it was pretty wonky, and your mileage may vary. And everybody would blog about these famous studies and say, well, they got a 37% increase by doing this tactic. And well, that was in a particular environment. And I wanted to talk about not the what or the specific situation, but about the why. And all of these disparate fields and all these separate researchers, it didn't paint the complete picture of how human beings evolved and all of the earlier life that happened and all of the machinery we still carry inside of us from an evolutionary standpoint. So I wanted to break down those silos and talk about sleep and culture and gender differences and language and neurochemistry and addiction, all of that stuff, all of the stuff that goes on in our brains without any of the jargon. So it'd be totally accessible. So I traced the whole evolutionary arc from early life on Earth to what makes us bizarrely and uniquely human.
So two things to sort of go back to from what you said. One is you were talking about when people were talking about how this applied to in different ways, they were often talking about, hey, we changed this particular thing to this, and then it turned around and created this 30% increase and blah, blah, blah. And that what you were saying is that there were a lot of other unique circumstances within that situation for that to make that happen. But there were some underlying fundamentals, which is what you're digging into with your book.
Exactly. I mean, the numbers aren't important. So for example, a well-known Nobel laureate teaching at a top research university found this with 120 MBA students in their class. Well, pardon me, but who the hell cares? I mean, that's a very specific little test they ran. It's the principle and the tendency and the psychological shortcut that's important. And what I tried to get to is the why behind it. Why did it evolve to be that inside of our heads? And that's what, so I want to explain those general principles without any jargon and in a colorful way so people can think about how to apply it to their specific situation. So the book isn't applied. It's for a general audience. I'll be writing other books, Primal Brain Marketing, Primal Brain Leadership in the series that will be applied. But this one is just to understand the why behind our evolution.
Yeah. So this is a super important baseline, it sounds like, for anybody listening to understand this stuff. I mean, it's not like this only is applicable to, again, your previous life and conversion rate optimization and all that sort of thing. There's so many applications for something like this.
I mean, this is applicable to culture, to politics, if you want to improve your personal relationships, a range of things.
How has the writing of this new book changed how you would, if you were still running the agency, if you were still working in the agency right now? And I would imagine that you're still probably doing some things here.
I'm still involved, right? With some of our large accounts. Yeah. In a strategic capacity. Definitely.
So how has writing the act of writing the book changed your work in any way?
It helps me. I'm a synthesizer. I like to see the general principles. I get bored with the details or the applications. So maybe I had to write this book to understand it myself, but if anything, it makes me go back to those more general principles and try to apply those, because that's a deep well and I know things are going to work. So I, in a way, I've kind of gotten divorced from the technology. I have enough smart people around me that can implement it, but it's the strategy and the approach that matters to me much more these days rather than the tactical execution or the technical implementation.
So it's giving you a good addition to the foundation for applying that strategic approach. Like you said, you're divorcing yourself from having to deal with the technology and stuff that's a lot of times part of the execution, and you've got folks to take care of that.
Yeah, but also they understand the strategy and the psychology, and that's really important. So what I'm doing a lot is training inside of either agencies or inside of corporate marketing departments so they can get all on the same page and understand these really key principles regardless of the actual work that they're doing.
Considering your initial interest in sort of what I would call, you know, emerging disciplines and technology around the machine learning and all that stuff that we were talking about before, AI and so on, and your new book and continuing to go down that direction, because you talked about all the other books that you plan to explore as well to get into more application of this. Where do you see some of the things heading over the next, say, 5 to 10 years, considering right now we're hearing so much talk about, every product's talking about having some sense of, you know, AI in it again. And I understand that there's quite a difference between application of this with humans and then also the neural networks and AI, machine learning and all that sort of thing. But do you see any intersection there? Do you see a place where that technology and the human element meet?
I think AI will basically tease out really complex, subtle patterns in large amounts of data. And it's going to essentially pick up on these human biases, these unconscious shortcuts that we all take when we make decisions and act. So I'm a little concerned that it'll actually make it easier for big companies to manipulate us, because they'll be, you know, dipping into that gray area of unconscious biases and how to take advantage of them. And you'll pick that up in large data sets, and they'll automatically tune into that and monetize it. So I'm kind of concerned about some of the ethical implications of AI. And biases aren't always positive. I mean, we, for example, culturally learn from people that are like us, that are the same gender, the same ethnic group, the same language spoken, the same age, and we prefer to learn from people that are like us. And the problem with that is that it creates kind of echo chambers. It creates the potential for separating people and groups instead of bringing us together.
Yeah, that got me thinking. There's got to be, with those biases and the bubbles and that you're talking about, there's obviously some really great things to be able to leverage in this regard for marketing and business. And then there's some that are maybe patterns that we'd probably be more happy to break, I guess.
I think we need to be on guard for them. For example, there is in real estate lending in this country, there's a long legacy of discriminating against minorities. So there was a phenomenon called redlining, where certain neighborhoods, because of their ethnic makeup, you just didn't make real estate loans or allow those people to buy houses. Well, now if the mortgage decision is made by an algorithm and you can't open up the black box and see exactly how it was made, and even if you could, you couldn't understand it, then where do you appeal that? How do you say there's a bias built into the algorithm? So I think we always have to have humans in the loop for a lot of the important stuff, so that we don't just rely on economically perpetuating problems and injustices and morally unfair things.
Yeah, we often think a lot about the AI machine learning element of stuff is somehow acting with some sense of purity or something like that.
And yeah, absolutely not. What it is learning from our biases.
They've got to have inputs, right? They don't think on their own. So if we have biases and all these things going on within ourselves, we're just injecting that directly into whatever form that that this AI structure, machine learning takes in order to take action on our behalf.
That's right. And I have a couple of friends of mine that are very concerned about all this, the ethical implications of this, about privacy and things like that. Stefan Hamel talks about that a lot. He was a very advanced data analytics kind of guy, and he just became concerned with the ethics of data privacy. And Kate O'Neill also is, kind of on that interface of what it means to be human and digital, and how those two relate. So there's a lot of folks waving the flag and doing great work in that area, but it's definitely something we should keep an eye on.
So this is the most important question of the entire conversation here. So I don't mean to put you on the spot because you have no idea what I'm going to ask.
No problem.
But as somebody who's lived in San Diego all your life, it is one of my favorite cities to go visit. All, you know, everybody knows about the San Diego Zoo and going out to the nice shoreline there and seeing the carrier and all that sort of stuff. And truth be told, I've only been out there a couple times, but I've fallen in love with that. If from an insider, where is the place that people just don't go check out, whether it's a restaurant or some other place, and they definitely should the next time they're out in that direction?
Well, I'm not much of a foodie since I'm a local guy, but there's a couple of beautiful spots that I think of as hidden San Diego gems. I happen to live in an area called Ocean Beach, and one of the most beautiful drives is along a road called Sunset Cliffs, but it's even better to walk it. And there's all these natural arches and little beach coves and just beautiful place along the coast. Another one is in a little coastal town just north of us called Encinitas. There's these publicly accessible gardens at the Self-Realization Fellowship. So you're like 300-foot bluffs overlooking the Pacific Ocean and the surfers below. It's just a gorgeous, incredibly impactful, spiritual little spot.
That sounds awesome. I want to get out. And it sounds like hopefully it's something even right now with things being open and closed here in 2020, that there might be a spot you can still get out to right now and spend some time on with.
Yeah, I believe both of those spots are open. That's right.
You know, my little spot that I decided when I was out there a couple years ago when we were out there for an extended period of time, and my wife was with me as well. Funny enough is you guys have a beautiful library in town.
We do. The one downtown is very interesting architecturally. And again, a little plug for my own alma mater, but UC San Diego, the campus is amazing. It's a very modern, just kind of a rocket ship of a university whose reputation keeps getting better. But the central library, or it's called the Geisel Library, named after Dr. Seuss, looks like a UFO that's about to take off. It's really unreal. You should check that out.
It's like three or four stories or more, and just,
I think it's
amazing.
8 or 9, and it's kind of like a UFO shape just sitting there
with a nice view of the water and everything. It's amazing. So Tim, how can, this is arguably the most important question, which is how can people follow you, get to know you, and, your book, maybe at the time of this, release of this is already out. I think it's in pre-order soon or now.
Yeah. So if you want to find out more about keynote speaking or corporate training, internet consulting, just visit my site, timash.com. That's pretty easy. And for the book, check out primalbrain.com. And the ebook is out. The audiobook's about to launch.
Nice.
I'll be selling author autographed copies directly off of my website. And then my two publishers in US and Canada and Australia and New Zealand will be launching this year and early next year with the official launches for the print versions.
So I'm excited now to go check out the book. I read so much on a daily basis in my work that I love getting away with an audiobook. So I'm excited that you have an audiobook coming out soon, and I definitely want to check it out because I really do believe, I agree with you 100%. This is fundamental underlying stuff that, sure, you can apply towards business. But like you said, this isn't even about applying it towards business in the book. It's just about understanding where these things lie. I mean, communications, relationships, everything. This has a place in it, and you just can't get away from it. And it's a commonality really that probably bridges the gap between, languages, culture, region in a lot of ways, right?
Yeah, absolutely. The way that I look at it, I've tried to make it super accessible, and it's a fairly easy read. But if you stop to read any one of the call outs or just a paragraph or two, you might think of all kinds of implications and go down the rabbit hole of how it would change your life, because it's pretty exciting stuff to think about why we do the things we do.
Well, next time when I get out to San Diego, I'll have to ping you, you know, when we see how things are down the line. But I appreciate your time and sharing with me, and congratulations on the new book.
Yeah, thank you. It's been my pleasure, Adam.
I love that you finished the episode. I super appreciate that you spent your time with us. You could have been in so many other places. Maybe you were avoiding those other places, and that's why you spent time with us. At any rate, I hope the time was well spent. And if you could do one thing for us, it would be incredible if you could subscribe to the podcast. And if you've already done that, first, I'd love to give you a hug when I see you next. And second, if you would then instead rate and review the podcast, it helps us get discovered. It helps others that are interested in the topics find us. And all the way around, it is super appreciated. If you'd like to connect with us for any reason, you'd like to connect with me directly and ask me some questions about marketing, or maybe suggest a topic for an episode that we should be talking about, go ahead and email me at adam@secretsushi.com, or just generally check us out at secretsushi.com to see what we're up to. All right, take care.